I know what that music means, and
what
it's
awesome.
It means that it's the best day of the week, and you're back. It's a double great whammy for me.
I don't remember the last time you and I did a show together.
December 6th.
Yeah, it would be over a month ago.
Mm-hmm. You look better. You're tan, you're trim, you shaved.
Yeah, well,
new baseball cap.
Yeah, everything's working. Everything's working. I was in Mexico. I went to Puerto Vallarta, Mexico with my family. And had really just like one of the, we all agree, this was one of the greatest vacations ever.
I love to hear that.
It was so perfect. In the 80s, every day. We had been to Puerto Vallarta before. We went there last year at about the same time. But this year, my wife found a resort online that was just absolute paradise. And,
nice. All inclusive?
No, we opted out of that.
See,
we did that
I
last
love the
year.
All inclusive.
Here's the problem with the all inclusives. Not always, but a lot of the time, the food isn't great, you know?
Well, they have buffets that are okay, but then don't they have individual restaurants that you can also use your all-inclusive
card with? Yeah, they do, but in the past, we have found that the food there is just okay, and especially in Puerto Vallarta, because their downtown is very vibrant, and it's got all kinds of great restaurants on the beach. So we were paying for all-inclusive last year, but then we were eating out all the time.
Oh, so yeah,
so this year we found a place that didn't do it that way. And we like to eat incredibly authentic. So we went to this place, Qdoba Grill, which was incredible. Uncle Julio's was so good.
Did you go to Taco Fresco?
Taco Fresco was really good. We ate in a restaurant one night. This place called The Cliff, Lake Cliff, you know. And a couple seats away from us was Slash.
Get out. Did you talk to him?
No, you know, it was so tempting. He was.
I just want to know what a Bill Leff says to a Slash.
I was going to say to him, because I interviewed him once at another station, and I was going to bring that up, but I went, how weird would it be to just go, you probably don't remember this, but 8 years ago, you know.
It wouldn't be weird if you did it in Spanish.
Right, then it would have been all right.
Hola.
Then it would have been fine. Yeah.
El Slasho.
But it was just weird because, like, my daughter.
You were vacationing with Slash.
We just kept looking over. Like, we were having a good time at our table, but I kept going, I wonder what Slash is doing right now.
Did he have a hat on?
Calamari. No, he did not wear a hat. No. Why do you ask that?
He usually wears, a top hat type thing.
No, he did not have a top hat on.
He was, he wasn't on stage, Steve. He was in warm weather.
He was performing. Yeah, well, he was eating. Yeah. So the one thing I asked you to do, I said, can you do me a favor while I'm gone? Make sure the Bears have all new coaches by the time I got back.
How about that?
And you pulled that off for me. And then I said, and please take care of Jerry Van Dyke. I'm worried about Jerry Van Dyke. And that, you didn't do that one.
Yeah, I know. That was very sad.
That was very sad.
And doesn't it make Dick Van Dyke feel bad? Because isn't he the older brother, Dick?
Dick Van Dyke is older than Jerry Van Dyke by a couple of years.
That makes me so sad.
Jerry had that sleepwalking thing.
That was just on TV,
what?
Steve. No, that was not real. That was only on the Dick
Explain
Van Dyke.
Because he'd wake up and he'd go all over town. And
when Jerry would play Stacy Petry, the brother of Rob Petry, he would fall asleep and then become very outgoing.
Somnambulist.
He was a somnambulist.
I don't even know if that's really the term. I might be right there.
I think you may be right.
Wow, I hate when
so
that
he was very shy and reserved normally. This was just in the character of Stacy Petry. But then when he would fall asleep, you give him a banjo and he would be, the life of the party.
Well, he was good.
The life of the party.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you guys saw this, but a couple of years ago on The Middle, Jerry Van Dyke played one of the grandparents.
Yes, I do. I love that show.
Frankie's father, one of the grandparents. So they reunited the two Van Dyke brothers as two brothers who, hadn't spoken for years. And it was a great episode to see those guys working together again.
Somnambulism is walking in one's sleep or under hypnosis.
You were right.
Thank you very much.
Nailed
I could be anyone's lifeline.
Nailed it.
Thank you.
Nailed it.
I studied when you were not here.
And, I've talked about this before. The people of, I'm trying to remember what the town is in Illinois that he
Danville.
Danville. Right. The people of Danville all thought that of the three up-and-coming guys who lived in Danville, so you had Jerry Van Dyke, Dick Van Dyke, and a young actor named Gene Hackman, everybody in Danville's money was on Jerry Van Dyke to be the breakaway superstar of that triad.
Well, now, typically the youngest is the most I don't know, annoying, I guess I should say. You know, they want the spotlight more because they're the baby.
Right.
And Jerry Van Dyke, I remember seeing him on various things going, that's Dick Van Dyke's brother because he's so wild and crazy in comparison.
Right.
So I could see where people would think he'd be the one.
He was more showy.
Yeah.
You know, a little shinier, a little brighter.
The look at me, Van Dyke.
Yeah. So years before you joined the station, I was fortunate enough to interview Dick Van Dyke. And I said, Mr. Van Dyke, that during the show, you and Stacy, the character of Stacy, your brother, you had a nickname for each other. And I already knew the answer to this because I read Dick Van Dyke's book. So I got this. But remember, they called each other Burfer all the time on the show. That was
Burfer?
Yeah. So Dick Van Dyke says that that was an inside joke for the people of Danville because that was a Danvillian word that they would call each other. You know,
they'd each call each other that?
Yeah. So Jerry Van Dyke and Dick Van Dyke, anytime they'd refer to each other, it wasn't by Rob or Stacy, the Petries. They'd say, hey, Burfer, how about this? Hey, Burfer, like that. And I told him that when my brother and I would watch the Dick Van Dyke show as kids, we thought they were calling each other pervert.
Did he laugh at
that? Yeah, he thought that was very funny. I said, because I didn't know what the word burfer meant, and every time you'd call each other that, I said, why is he calling him a pervert?
Well, that's funnier, actually.
It seems rude, almost.
But now, does burfer, did it have any meaning?
He explained it, and it still doesn't make sense to me. He said it's just a word that if you grew up in and around Danville at the time, I don't know that that word still exists in the Danville vernacular, but back then, it was just something you called a guy. It was a term of endearment.
Because it's almost like brotherly, like, hey, bro, hey, burr, well, hey, burfer, I don't know.
I guess so, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Very interesting. Pervert.
So that was a sad loss, as was the loss of a longtime WGN favorite, Dr. Milt Rosenberg.
Yeah, you know, I thought about you when I heard the news because you dealt with him on a fairly regular basis.
Every night.
I met him, I think, one time he came on the air and I spoke a little French and he was very excited about that.
Right.
And I said on the air that you had a lot of, most everyone here has met him. I only met him once or twice.
Yeah.
And I wish I would have run across him more because he just was amazing to me.
It was incredible to talk to him about anything because he was just so well schooled on everything that existed everywhere.
We should try and emulate him more.
Ugh.
Seriously.
Well, part of that...
Can I interrupt? Because, Wendy, when you pulled out that Somnambulist, I'm like, that was Milton-esque.
Oh, my God, that is the biggest
compliment.
Oh, my God.
You would have been very, very proud.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But
Steve,
don't you think to be that smart, part of it has to just be in you?
Yes.
Right? But then the other part has to culture that.
And you have to be curious, and you have to want to learn, and you have to do research and learn new things every day. That's something I should attribute to Milt. And I should try and do more.
All right, so I don't know if you know this, but every year he would do, there were a couple things that he did once a year. One of them was the state of WGN. So he would do a show, it was what was going on at WGN. He did that every year.
Like a state of a union, was the state of WGN.
Yeah. And he would have on, you know, various people who worked at the station, some on air, some off air. He did that every year. He also every year did a young comedian's show where he would talk about comedy. And one year it was Steve Cochran, Patty Vasquez, and myself. So we were the guests.
Before you worked here?
I didn't work here yet. The only one of the three of us that worked here at the time was Steve Cochran.
Okay. Right?
So it was the three of us talking about comedy and how comedy started and how it's evolved. So at some point, Milt says with a very straight face, when we come back, we'll talk about the younger comics of today, your Shecky Greens, your Jack Carters. And in his mind, those,
those were the younger ones.
Up-and-comers, when in reality, those guys were all in their 70s and 80s.
That's really sweet. He lived a good life, 92.
Yeah.
And do you remember, this was about a year ago, I said that my cousin named Candy listened to us, and she was 102 years old, and we wished her a happy birthday. Candy passed away at 103, but she listened to us every single day.
That's very nice.
And then I'm thinking, 103, and up till 102, she lived in her own apartment by herself.
Did she really?
She'd have someone come in to kind of help a little bit.
Yeah.
But I mean, to think of that, I hope I make it to 60. Good Lord.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to be late for a break because evidently you're saying the Danville term wrong. Bill is on the line.
Burfer.
Hey, Bill, listener Bill?
Yeah.
How do you say it, Bill?
This is Bill from, What they were actually saying was Burford with Burford. A D on the end.
And what do you know what it means?
Yeah, we had a furniture store here called Rhodes Burford Furniture for probably 70 or 80 years, and it had, within the last 10 years, had changed over to a different furniture store chain. But that was it for years, and I heard on numerous interviews with Dick Van Dyke before about the inside joke about the name.
So kids, because of the name of the furniture store, would call each other that name based on that?
It's crazy. I don't know why they would have said that.
Hey, Penny Mustard.
maybe just the name Burford sounded funny to them, but, and that just caught on, or what?
You know, with the D at the end of it, listener Bill, radio host Bill, sounds more like pervert.
Yeah, it does sound more.
So yeah. That's pretty awesome.
I was sure
awesome.
They were saying pervert back then, Bill. I'll be honest.
Well, thanks for clearing that up, Bill.
Oh, not a problem. And we love listening to you.
Thank you very much.
Glad to hear you back, both Bill and Wendy.
Oh, you're so nice.
Sweet.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
But you have to admit, it's a strange leap going from there being a furniture store in town to kids going, well, we should call each other that because there's a furniture store called that.
That's really weird. That's weirder
it's
now.
It's even stranger, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
All right, a quick break, and then there's more show. If you'd like to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Bill is back. Bill is back. Yay, hooray. Bill is back.
You're very kind. All right, so just a couple of quick highlights from the trip to Mexico. Number one, on the beach one morning, we've got our stuff laid out, and next to us is a family from somewhere either in or near Russia. I don't know exactly where. I didn't really talk to them, but they were very close by us. So it's a father, a wife, and their two kids who are in their teens. And they're conversing in Russian. And
aren't you part Russian?
I am part Russian. All I know how to say is "nyet," which means no. That's all I can say.
Moshnishnimat.
Listen to this.
Wow, Steve. You sounded like the short person from Twin Peaks.
Right.
Didn't he? Yeah. A little bit?
Like he was talking backwards.
Yes.
What does that mean, Steve?
Can I take your picture?
Can you take my picture? Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yanomani Paparuski is Ameriki.
Wow.
Something about an American.
Wow.
I don't speak Russian. I'm an American.
Okay.
So they brought with them to the beach, because normally to the beach you would bring a pair of sunglasses and a book, and that's really all you need, and some lotion. But they brought a tape recorder, and they would press the button, and then on the tape it would say, "Every morning I get up at 7 o'clock and brush my teeth." So they would say that on the recorder, and then the whole family in unison would say, "Every morning at 7 o'clock I get up and brush my teeth." And then they would rewind it. And then you'd hear, "Every morning at 7 o'clock, I get up and brush my teeth." And they did that for about a 15-minute interval.
Is that adorable? They're trying to learn English.
Yes. But my argument would be, as good as that
wear
is...
Wear headphones.
No, I was okay with that. But they're going to need to learn other phrases because they spent the entire morning working on that one phrase. And even though it's nice to know that they got up at 7 o'clock every day and brushed their teeth, because even then when they were frolicking in the surf, the four of them, they kept saying to each other, "Every morning at 7 o'clock, I get up and brush my teeth." And then they just kept saying that all day long.
Why didn't you write stuff for them? At 10 a.m., we frolic in the waves.
Right. I could have done that. I definitely could have done
that. Oh, that's pretty sweet, though.
Never occurred to you that maybe they were trying to infiltrate us?
Right. No, it occurred to me.
The Americans?
It occurred to me. But I let it go.
How do you say collusion?
There is no collusion, Wendy. Follow
the news.
There is
nothing.
No collusion.
There is no collusion.
The other thing was... we met Kylie's boyfriend for the first time. You know, she goes to school in New York.
He vacationed with you guys?
Yeah, he
spent... For the first time?
That's a weird way to meet someone.
That's what I thought, too.
What if there was some... You know, sometimes first meetings don't go very well. What if it went terribly awry? You're on vacation with this dude.
That would have been awful. Kylie was so sure that we would all hit it off.
Did you pay for him? He's not answering on the air. I know the answer.
I couldn't at dinner say, you know.
No, for the whole trip,
give
though.
Me X amount of money. He paid for his airfare from California. He lives in California. And then I picked up everything else.
But your daughter is a genius. Can I tell you that?
I know she is.
Wow.
Yeah. But now this kid is interesting because
interesting good?
No, he's really a good guy. I like them a lot. I mean, he had a great sense of humor and stuff. So his parents are producers of reality television shows, like America's Next Top Model and stuff. They produce that. So he grows up with a strange, like, I think I told you this. His godmother is Cher, but that's like no big deal to him at all.
Well, he's lived it.
That's what it is.
That's just normal to him.
Every story he told us had like celebrities in it.
That's why you like him, because you like celebrities.
I think that might be part of it.
You're happy that Kylie
met him. That might be part of it.
Yep.
He keeps telling me about his friend Brooklyn. He goes, and Brooklyn said this, and then Brooklyn and I go, that's an interesting name, Brooklyn. He goes, well, his parents, you know. I go, no, what about his parents? So it's David Beckham's son.
All right. I hope it works out, because if Kylie ever tries to dump him, you're going to talk her back into.
No,
you
got to
hang with this guy.
There's no way.
He'd make a great son-in-law.
Yeah.
Can he bring Cher over?
On his block, listen to who lives on his block. Maria Shriver and formerly Arnold Schwarzenegger, but he is no longer allowed
in
to
the
live
picture.
There. Chris Guest and Jamie Lee Curtis live on his block. Dr. Dre lives on his block. Like, he's just met, and I go,
imagine the block parties.
That's what I said. Those were my words exactly. I go, what goes on at the block parties? He goes, oh, it's so much fun, and he just tells me, and I go, oh.
They don't have block parties. I'm sorry.
They do.
What, Dr. Dre's spinning tunes?
Yes.
The guests are cooking on the grill.
Yes.
Only vegetarian stuff for Jamie Lee.
Now, did you allow
Activa.
Your daughter to spend any time with her boyfriend? Or
spend time meaning?
No,
you were taking it all up.
I didn't mean that.
Oh.
I didn't mean that kind of time.
Steve.
I thought you were going to ask that.
What a forward question.
No.
She was given a couple moments with him every evening when I was done hearing stories of celebrities.
So who's going to be on the show tomorrow?
Dr. Dre.
Excellent.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
And Cher?
Cher. Arnold Schwarzenegger. We'll take a quick break, and then there is more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I'm always here to help.
Thank you.
Sometimes late, but here.
I'm here to point and laugh at you, Steve.
Right. Well, you two haven't been together in 6 weeks.
It's been a long time. It's been a very long time. This story is actually two stories. It is the story of our president, our chief executive officer, referring to parts of the country.
I'm saying it. He is not my president anymore.
As
I mean, when is this going to end? Good.
Actually, it's funny you say that, because it's in about 1,100 days.
This can't be let happen. This can't continue.
It's about 1,100 days.
This is an embarrassment.
Yes.
It has been. Yes. This is the straw that broke the camel's back.
But how many straws have we seen?
This is the biggest straw.
This is the one that people won't stand for, and then people stand for it, and then another one happens. All right, so this story is two stories. It's the president of the United States referring to parts of the world as S-hole countries.
Why can't we say it?
That's the other part of the story, is the way that the story is being reported. It's still one of the words that you're not supposed to say. However, being that we're quoting the president himself.
The president of the United States of America in a news story. Why can't we say it?
Can I ask Steve a quick question? Steve, because this is the number one story.
Right.
Was there a discussion in the newsroom whether or not that word could be used to describe the story or not?
I don't know if they discussed it yesterday. By now, it's kind of known, so it's not really much of a, you know, we're not using it this morning.
Yeah.
But yesterday was the day.
I know there were some agencies that said, since the president responded to it, denying it today, that opened them up to using it. Now they can, because he's commented on it directly.
And he's completely lying. I mean, I don't know. You have Dick Durbin, who was there, and Senator Lindsey Graham was there as well.
Yeah.
Okay. And said, yes, he did say this several times. So the president tweeting, saying he didn't say it, is an absolute lie. I mean, come on, people. It's like a he said, and now more people are confirming and corroborating. When will this end?
You know, there's another story going on today that's being sort of overshadowed by all this, and that's that the president has canceled his trip to the United Kingdom.
But he blames that on?
Barack Obama.
Yes, he does.
What?
Which is...
How?
Well, it's laughable.
You guys, he is trying to get fired. This is the most passive-aggressive way.
Fired.
Or get impeached.
He Sometimes I think he just thinks we're stupid.
No.
And he thinks, no, I do. And I think he thinks we'll believe anything he says.
Not anymore. Come on.
Let me just finish this. Because now remember, England is our closest ally in almost every way. And he offended the Brits when he retweeted those unsubstantiated videos of Muslims and acts of violence on white people.
Mm-hmm.
So there was going to be a huge protest. So the idea that a U.S. president can't go to England, first of all, is unbelievable.
Right.
But the president said he was blaming it on this new consulate or embassy that he was all along going to cut the ribbon for. That was the purpose of the trip, was he was going to open it. Well, now, as we get closer to it, he said that he's not going to do it, and he blamed Obama for the quote-unquote bad deal and bad real estate. The move was in play long before President Obama took office under George Bush. They made the move for security reasons. Mm-hmm. The building that they were in now is space limited. It's protected historically, so they can't make changes to it. So they're moving the facility to make the diplomats safer. And the president is tweeting out that he's not going to go there because it was a bad real estate deal. Now, I don't know if he thinks that no one's going to check that this was actually begun under a president before Barack Obama, or if he thinks nobody is going to check to see the reasons why they did it. I don't understand what he thinks of us, that he thinks he can say something like that and it would just be accepted on its face.
Steve, when he comes up with an excuse like this, is this 100% his own doing, or does he say to somebody, look, we got to come up with some reason why I'm not going to make this trip to England? I thought it'd be interesting to put the blame on Barack Obama. Does he throw this past anybody before he says it out loud?
I have no idea. But, I mean, it came in a tweet, so I would be more likely to think he just
thought of it.
Did it on his own.
It.
Yeah.
And now Dr. Ben Carson is speaking right now as Trump honors Martin Luther King Jr. amid those racist remarks that he made. It's all a chess game, isn't it? And Mike Pence, how can he just sit there and look like a proud father in the background?
He never just sits there. He's usually nodding.
It's not
a chess game. It's dodgeball.
I guess, yes. I mean, it's a reaction all right.
There's
intelligent
manipulation.
People play
it's not just
chess.
That. There's strategy. There's manipulation. There's strategy. There's a long-term goal.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
None of that seems to exist here. It's dodgeball.
So the president and vice president, which one's Willie and which one's Nilly?
Is that from the movie? I didn't see the movie.
They switch off.
Oh.
They switch off. All right.
It makes me sick to my stomach. I mean, I've said this to you often. This is the big one. This is like, I feel like I've been punched in the stomach. We're Americans. I don't want to be sometimes. I'm sorry.
Can I just say one other fact that's out there?
Yeah.
That he's referring to Nigeria as this asshole country.
Right.
Why do we need immigrants from Nigeria?
Right. When we could have them from Norway, Steve.
Right.
He said
and
that
Norway's not happy
we want
with this comment.
From Norway.
They're saying, leave us out of this.
The Nigerians who immigrate to the United States have a higher degree of education than the Americans that they come to live with.
Interesting.
So they're more
educated. Will you tweet that to Donald Trump, please? Just do
it.
I'm
sure he's seen it.
No, I'm sure he hasn't. If you do it on Twitter, he'll see it and respond to it. Right? Doesn't it seem that's the way to get to him?
You would think.
I know I'm screeching. I don't know.
Yeah.
Now I know why Ro talks like this.
Well, see, then
still not as annoying.
There's what we've learned today.
God.
Can I tell you, at three different times during my trip to Mexico, because you always wonder, how are we being perceived right now by the rest of the world? As soon as you say the name Trump, they howl with laughter.
I can't take it anymore.
You know, with laughter.
Bill, now that I think of it, maybe that Russian family, maybe they were American families trying to learn a Russian accent.
Maybe. That would make a lot more sense, wouldn't it? That would
yes.
make a whole lot more sense. Let's do this. We must take a quick break.
Aren't you sick?
Yeah, but not any more or less sick. There was a time where this what might have shocked me. But just because of what we've seen over the last year plus, it doesn't shock me anymore.
Shocks me. And you know, I say that after every one.
Well, they're all shocking. God. I mean, each one individually is shocking. But then because there's been so many of them, you just go, well, throw it on the pile. You know? All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll find out the way that other media sources have been handling this story. Mr. Trump used a word that is offensive to many. So how was this covered by the rest of the news? We'll cover that next. If you want to jump in, we're 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about Donald Trump and his comments yesterday.
Shut your mouth.
I'm talking about Trump.
Mm-mm.
He doesn't want people from what he refers to as the S-hole countries coming over. Norway's fine. Bring the people from Norway over. He wants those people. But there's parts of Africa he is not comfortable with them coming over to the United States. So now he denies using that word,
but
asshole. But people who were in the room said, oh, yeah, we heard him say it. We heard him.
So how do you go? I know it's Twitter. Anyone can lie on Twitter. Yeah. Anyone.
Yeah.
But how do you say, no, I didn't use those words when you did?
Right. There is no
so
answer
many
to
questions,
that.
Bill.
There is no answer to that.
Well, again, if I can go back to last night, the White House issued a statement saying that the president is fighting for Americans while some senators are fighting for other countries.
Yeah.
And in their statement, in their original statement, they didn't dispute the language.
Right.
They never said he didn't say it.
But they didn't say he did.
Well, no, but you know, in it, you would sort of, if you were going to fight it, you would say the president didn't say these things. Instead, they offered a statement. It was a pretty coherent statement about why the president, you know, might have had such strong feelings. So even the White House sort of acknowledged that he said it until the president tweeted this morning.
But then how can that be?
Well, it makes you wonder, because there's got to be, especially if you're the president of the United States, there has to be some tact and diplomacy, which he just lacks. He doesn't have it.
Which one does he have?
He doesn't have any of it.
I got to turn my microphone off.
He doesn't have any of it. I can't think of any other president, good, bad, or indifferent, that would stoop to using that sort of terminology to describe other parts of the world. Even if you thought it, you would say, eh, I'm the president of the United States. I'm thinking it, but I'm not going to say it out loud.
Listen,
what does that make me look like?
I have no filters. You know me. You've known me a long time. Yeah. Even I wouldn't do something like that, and I'm not the president.
Right.
Come on.
Right.
I got to turn my microphone.
So here's how Anderson Cooper handled the situation yesterday. Does he say the S word or not when describing this? Here's Anderson Cooper last night.
Before we go tonight, I just want to take a moment to talk about Haiti, one of the places the president of the United States referred to today as a whole country. I was taught math in high school by a Haitian immigrant named Yves Vollel, who worked hard, who dedicated himself to teaching kids in America. He ultimately returned to his country of Haiti and was assassinated while running for president. I spent a lot of time in Haiti. I first went there in the early 1990s as a young reporter. In 2010, my team from CNN was the first international team of journalists on the ground after the earthquake struck. I spent more than a month there and have returned many times on assignment and on vacation. Like all countries, Haiti is a collection of people. It's rich and poor, well-educated and not, good and bad. But I've never met a Haitian who isn't strong. You have to be to survive in a place where the government has often abandoned its people, where opportunities are few, and where Mother Nature has punished the people far more than anyone should ever be punished. But let me be clear tonight. The people of Haiti have been through more. They've been through more. They withstood more. They fought back against more injustice than our president ever has. Tomorrow marks exactly 8 years since the earthquake struck Haiti. A 7.1 magnitude earthquake killed anywhere between 220,000 and 300,000 people. The actual numbers will never be known because they were buried in unmarked pits. 1.5 million people were displaced. For days and weeks, without help from their own government or police, the people of Haiti dug through rubble with their bare and bloodied hands to save complete strangers, guided only by the cries of the wounded and the dying. I was there when a young girl named Bee, who'd been trapped in rubble for nearly a day, was rescued by people who had no heavy equipment. They just had their God-given strength and their determination and their courage. I was there when a 5-year-old boy named Monley was rescued after being buried for more than 7 days. Do you know what strength it takes to survive on rainwater buried under concrete, a 5-year-old boy buried for 7 days? Haitians slap your hand hard when they shake it. They look you in the eye. They don't blink. They stand tall and they have dignity. It's a dignity many in this White House could learn from. It's a dignity the president, with all his money and all his power, could learn from as well. On the anniversary of the earthquake, on this day when this president has said what he has said about Haitians, we hope the people in Haiti who are listening tonight in Port-au-Prince, in Jacmel, in Benet, in Miami and elsewhere. We hope they know that our thoughts are with them and that our love is with them as well.
So eloquently said, you know.
He got very upset. He has a connection, definitely, yeah, to Haiti.
Yeah.
We have a lot of texts like, why are you guys so upset that he said the S word and not his racist comments? I don't care that he said the S word. Right. I really don't.
I care what
he called those people.
Yeah. It's a two-pronged attack. Like I said at the very beginning, this is two stories. It's how the media is reporting the story. But the deeper story is certainly the fact that the president has once again proved he's a racist. He just is a racist.
There's no way around it.
You can try defending him for the rest of your life. The man is a racist.
All right. Well, 708 begs to differ with you, Bill. Dear Lord, shut up now. The comment is judgmental at best, not racist.
Yeah, well, all right. So where do you draw the line between judgmental and racist? As he's saying, hey, there's a lot of great white people over in Norway.
They're blonde,
they're beautiful. Well, our arms are open.
Put it in context as well, whereas he was quoted, not on the record, but by reporting, that he referred to Haitians, I think it was late last year, as all having AIDS.
God.
And saying about Nigeria that once they come here, they'll never go back to their huts.
Right, right. I remember that. It's amazing, isn't it?
Seriously, Wendy, be a little more professional. Settle down and use your words. I'm not a Trump fan either. I'm so tired of your ranting. Just be professional already. That will never happen. I was not hired to be professional. We are hired to speak our opinions and our minds. And I agree with 630. He needs to go. Unfortunately, most of Congress sits by and lets him get away with this. There's no excuse for him. Doesn't anyone in Washington have a conscience? I used to be a Republican. He's a despicable person. That, I guess, is my biggest question, is how people, Republican or Democrats, how can you sit by and say, I support this guy? This is not behavior. And speaking of being professional...
That's upsetting. As upsetting as it is that he is the president of the United States, the more upsetting thing is that he continues to fool so many people. I'm baffled nearly half the country could show any support to this guy back then or now. I mean, on a daily basis, he proves that he's unfit to be the president of the United States, and yet people continue to go, oh, come on, you're being a little hard on him. He's the president of the United States. He's a guy who just should be the most important man on the planet.
But you don't get to get away with things because you're the president of the United States.
No.
I don't understand it all, Bill. I'm going to try and use my words better.
You know, in the past, you've asked the question, how and why do you still support him? And every line lights up with people who are still showing support. If I loved him, if I absolutely was madly in love with him, at some point I'd go, oh, I have picked the wrong racehorse. I really need to jump ship on this because this guy's a
race
disaster.
Race being the operative word.
Right. Racist horse.
Last night was one of those moments where I think I'm living in a Will Ferrell movie.
Right.
And it sure seems
like surrealistic,
isn't it? When I'm watching news on TV and I'm hearing anchors talk about the size of nuclear buttons.
Yes.
You know, I'm like, oh my God, this is a comedy. This is something you would see.
But
then last night, you know, seeing the word on the crawl on the bottom of these news, and then hearing anchors use the word, like, what has happened here?
I know.
We've lost all control. All control, guys. This is a real country here, isn't it?
Well, getting back to the size of the button thing, that was a week ago. But honestly, as it was happening last week, I kept saying to myself, if the stakes weren't so high, nuclear war is a pretty big battle. Once you get to the point of nuclear war, that becomes extremely serious. So you go, this should be funny. The fact that two world leaders are basically pointing at each other's midsection and going, mine's bigger than yours. No, mine's bigger than yours. That should be funny. If this was a dark comedy, that'd be really funny. But it's not. It's people's lives are on the line.
So much happened yesterday, and that was another one. The president gave an interview with the Wall Street Journal where he said he probably has a very good relationship with Kim Jong-un.
Yeah,
right. Probably.
And then so we don't have any contact with them officially. So it begged the question: have you talked to him or have you not? And he, you know, said, "Well, I'm not going to get into that." But it was just a phrase that recharacterize the whole situation,
right?
But there may have been nothing to it at all.
But just
we don't know that they've had any contact with each other at all.
But from what we know about the relationship between those two guys, Would you qualify that as probably a good relationship? It doesn't sound like it's a great relationship to me.
Is it all for show? Are they both like the attention? They both.
Well, look, let's say this. The North Korea has moved and is talking to South Korea. So, you know, I don't know why. If I were the Trump administration, I'd be pointing that out and taking a little credit for that. He's talked tough, and Un is talking to South Korea. I mean, that's been a positive development under this administration and under the whole button talk thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of buttons, we got to hit one.
Press one. All right, let's take a quick
Mine's
break.
Mine's not that big, so I'll tell you right now.
Then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thanks, Steve. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. You can reach us at 312-981-7200. Our guest right now is Alexander Zelbin. Alexander is the managing editor for TV Guide. You can find TV Guide online at tvguide.com. Alexander, thanks for joining us again. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's start out with one of our favorites, returning to television. Hasn't been gone that long, but we need him now more than ever. David Letterman back on Netflix. What do you know about his new show?
So he is taking a little bit of a different tack. It's not a daily talk show by any means. In fact, it's only coming out monthly on Netflix. The show is called My Next Guest Needs No Introduction, and it's a very different format for him. The first episode dropped today on Netflix, and it's basically just him and Barack Obama sitting on a stage talking for about an hour. There's a couple of film segments. He has a few film segments where he walked the bridge in Selma, David Letterman, with John Lewis, which are pretty powerful, and those tie back into what they're talking about with Barack Obama's presidency. But it's wonderful. I tweeted this out a little bit this morning, but I just feel like it's funny, it's hopeful, it's heartfelt. It avoids talking about a lot about what's going on today. So if you're looking for a little bit of an island away from the news to a little bit of a rosier era, let's say, this is definitely the show for you. And I did not expect how many times that I would get choked up watching it, not just from Barack Obama's direction when he's eloquently or in a very humorous manner talking about things, but also David Letterman. It's a lot about them getting back to what they love after a little bit of a break.
And this is a perfect format for David Letterman at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, all the rigorous work of having a nightly show is behind him. Now he can just mm-hmm. do it when he pleases. How perfect. I'm surprised it doesn't get political. I really am.
Well, it does in a certain sense. I mean, listen, the current president's name does get dropped once right in the middle of the show. But for the most part, what Dave is letting him do is what I think great interviewers do, which is he sits back, he listens, and he prods him a little bit, but he mostly lets Obama talk. And that's what's kind of beautiful about it. One of my favorite bits in the show is just them talking about what it was like when Barack Obama dropped off his daughter to college. And it's this wonderfully human, emotional story that I'm never going to be president. I don't want to ruin that for you guys, but it just made me really relate to Obama in a very specific way. And that's what I think makes it a wonderful interview.
So the standards that we've come to expect from him in most talk shows, like there is no monologue at the beginning. There is no Paul Schaefer in the orchestra. All those things are gone, right?
Well, here's the sneaky thing about it, is he doesn't exactly do a monologue, but he does come out and talk for, I'd say, 30 to 45 seconds to warm up the crowd a little bit at the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's not a monologue, but it takes the place of a monologue. And I didn't know this going in, but if you check the credits at the end, there's a little bit of music that plays throughout. The music is by Paul Schaefer.
Oh, it is.
So, so there's no band on stage or anything like that. If you're looking for another Letterman show, it's definitely not that at all.
Yeah.
But he has some of his familiar elements, some of the things that he relies on. But it feels completely fresh and new and, like I said, very heartfelt but very funny at the same time.
So what do you think the difference is? You know, Johnny Carson, when he left, said, you know, this isn't the last you'll see of me. I'm not going to host The Tonight Show anymore, but I'm certainly not going to fall off the side of the planet.
Liar.
You're going to see more of me. And then we didn't see more of him. What do you think the difference is between he and David Letterman, where David Letterman was away for a little while and then said, I really should get back to work?
Well, here's the thing that I think from beyond what Obama is saying in the special, David Letterman doesn't say a whole lot. You know, by necessity of him being the interviewer, he's mostly asking questions both of Obama and John Lewis. But it opens with a short bit of him trying to book Obama on his show. You know, they flash back to a time that he was a guest on the Letterman show. And then he calls him on the phone and he's like, he gets off the phone and somebody off camera says, do you think, how did that go? And he was like, I think it was a no. And then it cuts to them going into the interview. So through little questions and little bits from Dave, particularly a bit at the end that I don't want to ruin, where Dave very briefly talks about something that honestly made me cry. It's a lot about, I think, him trying to figure that out. Why does he feel the need to come back to this? Why was he popular in the first place? And in a strange way, he is exploring it through the lens of these huge, big-name guests. So it's pretty fascinating to watch.
Do we know other guests that have been rumored to be on? I know Barack Obama, obviously, the first one. Are any...
Yep. Yeah, the next one is actually be George Clooney, which seems like a slightly different show. But he's going to have Jay-Z, Tina Fey, Malala is going to be on the show, Howard Stern. I think that's it for the first season. I think there's only six episodes, so it's pretty focused on that. But there's some pretty big names coming up.
Would you kind of put him in the bracket, Alexander, of who could he not get? Who would say no to him at this point? Is he that big at this point, would you think?
I think so. I mean, I think... You know, by necessity of being Dave Letterman coming back, doing a Netflix special and saying, you're doing six of these and you're going to be one of six.
Yeah.
I can't imagine who would turn him down.
Yeah.
$10 he gets Uma and Oprah.
Oh, yeah. That's a good show. That's a good show. Alexander Zelvin is our guest. He's the managing editor over at TV Guide. We'll take a quick break and then continue. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder, and our guest is Alexander Zelvin. Alexander is the managing editor of TV Guide. Visit them online at tvguide.com, of course. Alexander, this is depressing. A show I've been waiting for a long time, and now I find out it's on Amazon, and we don't get Amazon, although I could have the show delivered to my house in 24 hours. That's the show Electric Dreams, Philip K. Dick's mm-hmm. Electric Dreams. What do we know about this?
Well, if you're a fan of Black Mirror and aching after a short season that just dropped on Netflix, you can watch Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams. It's for Amazon subscribers, as you mentioned. And it's based on Philip K. Dick's short stories. You know, so they feel a little antiquated at certain points, but it's beautifully produced and beautifully acted and directed. There's an all-star cast. You got Steve Buscemi, Bryan Cranston, Anna Paquin, Janelle Monáe, Richard Madden from Game of Thrones, Greg Kinnear, a bunch of others. And one of the nice things about it is every episode is its own thing, just like Black Mirror. So if you're looking for some weird sci-fi, you can jump in. If you don't like one episode, check out the next and you're good to go. But I would recommend in particular, if you are interested in the show, they stacked it a little bit. The first three episodes are the ones that are, in my opinion, the best.
I get Amazon Prime, Bill, so I'll just watch it and tell you if it
would
was
you
good
do that
or not.
And react yes. the scenes for me?
I'm loving Black Mirror, and I noticed Jodie Foster directed an episode of it. There are celebrities in it, but this, you say even weirder, I'm all for this. I really am.
Yeah, and it really goes the range where Black Mirror is very focused on technology. This is a lot of different things. You know, there's alien invasion, there's space travel, but there's also stuff that I have a hard time describing. My favorite episode in the season is one that stars Timothy Spall, who, if you're a fan of Harry Potter movies, you might know as Peter Pettigrew. But he basically plays a train station attendant who a woman approaches him, asks him to go to a station that, as far as he knows, doesn't exist. And he starts to explore it, and the entire time you're wondering, what is this? Is this a ghost story? Is it something about technology? Is it something else? And without spoiling, you don't quite get those answers, but it's a very beautiful ride as you go.
Now, that reminds me, there was a Twilight episode called Next Stop Willoughby, which is kind of that same mm-hmm. story. Is it like that?
If there's a show that it's more similar to, it's definitely The Twilight Zone. You know, they're longer episodes, they're hour-long episodes. And one thing that I think you'll find interesting, because Philip K. Dick's stories have been around for so long, they've been copied so much through The Twilight Zone and other shows. So when you're watching the episodes, the stories are going to feel a little familiar sometimes. You'll think, hey, haven't I watched this before?
Yeah.
But I promise you they are all new.
All right. Forgive me for not knowing who Philip K. Dick is. I'm sorry.
Blade Runner is his, right? Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, and Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, and a lot of short stories. He's probably not as well known as like Isaac Asimov or other writers of that ilk, but he's as influential.
All right. And I asked Bill off the air. Bill's a former stand-up comic. And there's a stand-up comic that I've been watching, and I'm scratching my head, and I don't know if I absolutely adore this show or if it weirds me out. Maria Bamford is her name, and you've heard of her, Bill. I never heard of her.
She's so funny.
She does voices, cartoon voices for Cat Dog, and there's a big one, Adventure Time. She's a princess on Adventure Time. There's the show Lady Dynamite, and it is so out there, but what I love about it, and I believe this is true to form, is Maria Bamford suffers from bipolar 2 disorder, and she goes on to talk about it, and what we're seeing, I think, is through her eyes. Do you know more about that? I'm fascinated by it.
I think you described it perfectly. You know, I've actually met Maria Bamford a couple of times through comedy stuff, and she is the most wonderful, delightful person, but though she's amped up a little bit on stage, clearly she's workshopped the material, this is, I would argue, a pure expression of her as a person in a similar way to other shows that, like, channel comedians onto the screen. There's two seasons. It's on Netflix, so you can watch them right now. But I agree with you. It's definitely out there. It's definitely weird.
But I love it. I kept watching it.
Yeah, she is somebody that follows her muse, and this show just dives right down into it.
She did a comedy special once. I don't remember what the service she did it for was, but I saw it. So it's a comedy special. And she taped it in her mom and dad's apartment, and they were the only audience for the whole comedy special was her parents. Really inventive.
That's hysterical.
She's great. And the show's great. And if you like comedy, there's kind of a murderer's row of guest stars that she has on there. There's Anna Gasteyer shows up in a recurring role.
She's great.
Ed Begley Jr., Glennon Parham, Mo Collins, bunch of other people. Basically, if you've ever watched stand-up comedy or any sort of comedy in the past couple of years, you'll see somebody you recognize on the
show. Oh, that's excellent. Good. Gillian Anderson is leaving The X-Files.
I am, too.
Again. Right. And you and I already have.
I watched it. I watched the premiere. Wow. Could Mitch Pileggi overact more? I love Skinner, but boy.
At this point, you know, the news came out a couple of days ago. We kind of knew this was going to happen already. It's honestly a surprise that there has been so much X-Files. We had the one event series, now we have the second event series, but Gillian Anderson has officially gone on record and said, nope, I'm going to do other things. I'm completely done with this. If they bring X-Files back one more time, I'm not going to be involved. That said, if you are still an X-Files fan, and it sounds whether you like you're not exactly anymore,
I might give it one more shot.
Yeah, David Duchovny was a little more waffly. It was like,
he must need money more.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what this is like, Alexander? You're probably too young to get the reference, but when we were kids, Billy Martin was the manager of the Yankees, then he wasn't, then he was, then he wasn't, then he was, then he wasn't. Gillian Anderson's tenure with the X-Files is almost identical to Billy Martin's with the Yankees.
Yeah, I do think at this point, though, that she is actually 100% done with the show, no matter how much money they throw at her. There's another show that she's on where she's excellent on it called American Gods. And same thing, she said she's not coming back.
She bailed on that, too.
Yeah, I think she just wants to make a change in her career. She wants to do something different. So I guess you could probably never say never, but this is as close to never to say never as you can get.
All right, we only have a minute or two on this, but boy, I hope this is good. They're turning Anne Rice's Interview with a Vampire into a TV series. It was already a movie, a Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt movie, but now it'll be a longer form TV series. What do we need to know about this? When can we see it?
No idea when we can see it. It's very early stages, but I mentioned American Gods earlier. That's from executive producer Brian Fuller. I don't know if he specifically left to do this, but he's working on the whole Vampire Chronicles to create a series for the Paramount Network. We don't know if he's going to be the showrunner or exactly what's going to happen, but as of right now, they're working on it, and it should be pretty cool, particularly if you're a fan of vampires or Anne Rice.
No names have been mentioned yet for who will play Lestat or anybody else in the series?
Nothing. I hope Brad Pitt comes back and does a cameo, though.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
And then, Alexander, I've done this with you before, but I'm always anxious. What's coming up this week on TV that we should be looking out for? What really good things can we expect this week on TV?
Sure. This next week is actually going to be a big one. Black Lightning is hitting on January 16th on the CW. This is a big superhero show, but it also takes on racial politics in a real way. And if you've never watched any other superhero shows on the CW, definitely check that out. Wednesday, January 17th on FX, you got The Assassination of Gianni Versace, American Crime Story from Ryan Murphy. And that should be bananas, but also pretty excellent just based on People versus OJ. And if you're a fan of Portlandia,
yes.
The final season is kicking off. Kind of sad, happy news on January 18th on IFC. So it'll be your last chance to keep it weird.
I'll put a bird on it.
Good. Very good. Alexander, always fun to talk to you. Thanks so much. Hope you have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks for having me on.
That's Alexander Zelbin, managing editor over at TV Guide. See them online at tvguide.com. We'll take a quick break, then some more show. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Oh, I love this music.
It's the Olympic theme. Somebody famous write this? I think somebody famous wrote
John Williams.
No.
Not who works here. I don't know who wrote it. Really?
Yeah, I think so. I'm almost sure.
This is so regal and wonderful yeah. and gets you excited.
Yeah.
And I think this music is going to make someone on the phone very excited right now. Theron Sands is with us. And Theron, you just participated in the 10,000-meter long track speed skating event at the 2018 U.S. Olympic Team Trials in Milwaukee. What, just last week?
Yeah, that was last week.
All right. Theron, how'd you do?
I skated the best I've ever skated here at the Pettit. I got second overall in the nation, and I'm really happy about that.
All right. Can I ask you how old you are?
I am 53 years old.
Ask Wendy how old she is. And I hope you're sitting down.
No, that sounds like a bad idea.
No, I will tell you, I'm 54 currently. Mm-hmm. I will be 55 in a couple of weeks. And I can't even imagine doing any kind of event. Do they have napping at the U.S. Olympics?
Synchronized napping.
That's the only thing I could do. I mean, this is a huge accomplishment for you. I know the silver medal, but come on.
It was fantastic. It was definitely a life experience.
How much did you not win by? I'm not going to say lose by. That's
right.
Cruel. But how much did you not win by? What was the time you missed by?
9 seconds.
Oh, and if you had beaten this guy, God. The guy who beat you by 9 seconds, let's say you had beaten him by 1 second or 2 seconds, what would have happened to you?
I would have been a lot more excited.
Gone on to the Olympics,
so that's
though, right?
What that was. You had to get first place.
No?
Yeah, well, we had to get first place, but the U.S. didn't have a spot for the 10,000 meters for the Olympics, so we were skating for the national title.
Oh, wow. That's impressive.
That's still so unbelievable.
And you said it was one of the best you've ever skated? Is that what you said at the beginning?
Yes, it's the fastest I've ever skated here at the Pettit. I was 2 seconds quicker than I've ever been.
Congratulations. How do you account for this? What was going on with you that you did so well?
You know, I've had great coaching. My current coach, Jeff Kleiber, has done a great job with me this year and just focus and was able to skate just the race of my life.
All right. Now, the Pettit National Ice Center is what you're talking about, and you have a long commute to get to the Pettit National Ice Center. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, I live and work in Champaign, Illinois, and as an accountant. And I drive up every Wednesday, and I train through Sunday, and then drive back and go back to work.
How many miles is that to Champaign from Milwaukee?
210.
Wow.
Oh my God.
That's dedication. That's amazing.
All right, there's a way we can help you. You've set up a GoFundMe page. Explain that.
Yeah, I have a GoFundMe page that's set up, and I've got to modify it. It says to get to the Olympic trials, which I've done that, and now I'm trying to raise about another $1,500 so that I can skate the finale in Calgary and hopefully set a new world record again in the 5,000 meters.
Talk about your world record. You currently have one, don't you?
I currently hold the world record in the 10,000 meters for my age class. I set that in March of this year up in Calgary. It was 13 minutes and 57 seconds. And I did hold the 5,000-meter world record, which I reset for the 12th time in Salt Lake City in October at 6 minutes and 53 seconds. And then the Swiss guy came out and he went faster, so I've got to go beat him.
So when you say your age class, does your age class start at 50? Where does your age class start?
It's 50 to 55.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
What? I'm almost on the other side of that age bracket, though. I don't like that.
Almost. So what keeps you doing this well into your 50s? Like, a lot of people at some point will go, well, I did this for a while, but now, you know, I'm older. I don't need to keep doing this. But you do. What's going on with you? How come?
Well, when I started, I switched from inline skating to ice skating back 11 years ago. You know, I was looking at what I could and couldn't do, and, you know, I was just learning. And then I thought, you know, it'd be fun to, you know, work to skate, you know, for a national team spot or for the Olympic trials. And then everyone said, there's no way, it's impossible. And once they told me it was impossible, then I decided I had to give it my all and make it possible.
What is the typical age for an Olympian? I did look up the oldest male medalist, the oldest person ever win an Olympic medal. It was a Swedish shooter by the name of Oscar Swan. He won a silver medal in 1920 when he was 72 years old.
Oh, that's nice.
Wow. Wow. Well, the average age of our Olympic team, I think, is 22.
Wow.
And you're 2.5 times that. That's so impressive.
Yes. I have kids older than them.
Do they skate?
A couple of them did, but they didn't stay with it very long.
No. And Theron, you've been doing this since you were a kid, right? You started when you were very young?
I started skating when I was 13 because my parents made my sister take me to the skating rink with her. And that was at Golden Gate Skate Land in Biloxi, Mississippi.
Wait, and, Mississippi? It must have been indoors, obviously, because
yeah,
it's pretty
indoors.
Warm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was roller skating.
Okay.
And, you know, I just loved it from the minute, you know, I got there and started doing it. 2 years later, I was on their speed skating team and working at the rink as well. And first race I went out, I got first place in, so I was on my way.
Wow. Have you had any major injuries doing this in all the years you've been skating?
2 years ago, I had a bone spur in my right foot that poked out the side of my foot early in the season, and I had to doctor it all the way through the season and then had surgery. So,
and now you're okay.
No broken bones.
Has Tanya Harding or her husband at any time tried to attack you for your skating prowess?
No, but the young guys are always worried when I get on the line with them because they hate it when I beat them.
I bet that's true. I imagine, because they say to themselves, well, here's a guy who's our dad's age. What's going to happen if he skates against us? That must really mess with them.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, I respect them for what they're doing, and, you know, they show respect back to me. You know, last year I skated against one of our national team members in a race, and, you know, with 4 laps to go, he heard me coming, and he just dug as deep as he could, and he pushed so hard he had to throw up at the end of the race, and he's like, I was scared.
Wow, that's passion and drive.
Yeah.
Have you seen the movie I, Tanya yet? Because it's really, really good. I had kind of forgotten about some of the details that involved that, and when you watch it, you really feel for Tanya Harding after witnessing what she went through. Have you seen it?
No, I have not seen that movie, although I have watched that. I remember when I was watching the Olympics, and I remember when all that took place with her and Nancy Kerrigan.
Yeah. I kind of had forgotten a few little details, but, you know, you really didn't realize that Tanya Harding was truly a talented skater.
Yeah, she was.
Oh, yeah.
You know, not the pretty face that perhaps the Olympic Committee wanted. But you, on the other hand, Theron Sands, you can go check out his GoFundMe page. He's trying to find a way to get to the Pettit National Ice Center in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, from Champaign, Illinois. How do we find you on GoFundMe? What's the best way to do it?
Oh, gosh. I think it's titled Theron to the Olympics right now. Like I said, I need to change that. But you can search for my name and speed skating, and it comes up. It's also, if you search me on Facebook, it's on my Facebook page.
Well, perfect. And we hope to see you and talk to you when you break another world record, Theron.
Okay, I'm going to try it again tomorrow. I'm going to try to break the 3,000-meter world record tomorrow here at the Pettit.
My God.
Excellent. I hope you get it.
Look
You're
at that.
Very inspirational.
I know.
Very inspirational. Well, thank you, Theron.
Good
Continue
luck.
Good luck to you.
All right. Thank you very much, Bill. Thank you, Wendy.
Absolutely.
Take care.
Theron, Theron Sands. If you want to know how to spell it, by the way, T-H-E-R-O-N, Sands. You can look him up on GoFundMe. That's complete dedication. I'm sorry I wouldn't drive from from Champaign to Milwaukee on Wednesday just to skate.
It seems a little ambitious.
Although we don't have a world record either.
No, we don't have any kind of world record. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there will be more show, and no records will be broken. I can guarantee you that. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we just talked to a 53-year-old Olympian. He just has world records.
I don't think he's an Olympian.
Befuddled on this.
You can certainly break records and not be an Olympian.
So you have.
I've broken many, many.
Weren't you going to go for a record for the longest ping pong playing?
Yeah, I wanted to.
What happened, Bill?
I don't know.
Where's that drive, that passion?
I don't know. The people in sales were putting something together for me. And then they died. I think they went elsewhere. The salespeople that were working on that, they went elsewhere. I don't know what happened.
There were some people who made age is no barrier for some inspiring old Olympians. The games in Rio in 2016. Now, I was asking you off the air, they stagger the summer and winter Olympic years, right?
Yeah, they're 2 years apart.
Didn't they used to be on the same years?
Uh-huh.
And there was a reason for changing this up?
I don't remember what the reason was.
Did they coincide with the election year for president?
No. No.
Why is it always 4 years? What's the magic number four?
I don't know.
All right. Well, I don't know when they staggered them, but the last time we had the Olympic Games, 2016, that would be the Summer Olympics, correct?
I think so. Yeah, in Rio it was summer, yeah.
There was a 19-year-old swimmer, Katie Ledecky, who set 11 world records. God,
that's
19
impressive.
Years old. Usain Bolt, 29-year-old sprinter, competing in his third Olympics in a row. And then there was Mary Hanna, who was 61 years old from Australia, and she became Australia's oldest competing Olympian, and she rode a horse at the Rio Games.
At 61.
61 years of age.
That's great.
The grandmother of three, whose first Olympics was Atlanta in 1996, and she's hoping to get to the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo.
Oh.
Philip Dutton, 52, United States, another equestrian who at age 52, oldest U.S. Olympic athlete in Rio of that year.
It seems like if your sport has to do with you doing something on or with a horse, you can be as old as you want. But if it's just you, good luck. It's hard.
Well, there was a woman from Uzbekistan, or do you say Uzbekistan?
Uzbekistan, I say.
Oksana Shuzovatina.
Mm-hmm.
41 years old, she made history as the oldest woman gymnast to compete in the Olympics.
At what age did you
41.
Say? 41. Oh, wow. That's mm-hmm. impressive.
Allie Reisman, the U.S. women's gymnastic team captain, has been nicknamed the grandma of her team at the age of 22, but this girl was 41.
Old. Yeah.
And then at 42, Joe Pavey was Britain's oldest ever Olympic track athlete as she competed in Rio.
It's got to be an extra thrill for somebody much, much older, because you'd say, well, by all rights, I don't stand a chance with these guys that are half my age, but then you show them.
I loved to play basketball. You loved playing tennis, even as a kid. Is that when you started?
Yeah.
Or was it after you saw Vince Van Patten?
Well, that was the turning point.
How old were you?
I must have been about 11 or 12, I think, when I saw an episode of Apple's Way, where Vince Van Patten played tennis against Farrah Fawcett. And I was watching it going, wow, if you play tennis, you can hang out with Farrah Fawcett. So I started playing tennis.
Are you being 100% honest?
I swear to you, it's true. I remember you could see the light bulb go off over my head because I'm like, all it takes to hang out with Farrah Fawcett is a good tennis game. I gotta learn to play some tennis. I told Vince Van Patten that story once. He felt honored.
I started playing basketball because I got to be honest with you, that was the thing that came the easiest to me. And
basketball
Yeah, I mean, I tried gymnastics. I wasn't very good at it. I did track. I was okay, but it was boring to me. Mm-hmm. Basketball, I truly enjoyed, and I was pretty good at it. But I did have a little inspiration from Barbara Cooper, played by Valerie Bertinelli, who on One Day at a Time always had a basketball and wore shorts and the knee-high tube socks, mm-hmm. and was always bouncing the ball. So After seeing that on One Day at a Time, I would very frequently have a basketball that I would carry with me everywhere I went.
Sure. Well, it makes sense.
So isn't that funny that Valerie Bertinelli inspired me?
Yeah.
Vince Van Patten inspired you. But did you ever in a million years think of taking it to the limit and getting to the Olympics? Because I never even thought that.
No,
I played varsity basketball freshman year. So to me, that was kind of an accomplishment.
It is an accomplishment. But you know, I think
but I never thought Olympics.
But you really, on your best day, you've seen Olympic basketball players.
Yeah, but they started somewhere.
Yeah, but I knew I'm a good player, but I knew
you're
I was
really good.
Not Olympic quality good.
That is just you being humble.
Yeah. Plus, I wasn't allowed to leave the country at the time. Now, the restrictions have been lifted, but back then I couldn't leave the country.
All right, we have an answer on someone has texted us at 312-981-7200. You can also call us, people. Olympics used to be every 4 years and on the same year as the presidential election.
But there is no correlation. They didn't do that on purpose. It just happened. It just worked out that way.
Well, they changed it in 2000 to split them up so that the Summer and Winter Olympics alternate every 2 years, but summer to summer or winter to winter is still every 4 years. I think to allow athletes to compete in multiple sports summer and winter for training. That makes sense. What?
I'm not positive that's true, because there's no athletes doing both, are there? I can't think of any athletes that participate in some...
There's no equestrian ice skater out there?
No. No.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess you do pretty much have your one sport.
You have to focus. Yeah. I mean, I could be wrong on this, but I don't think I am. But the athletes I know who play in the winter games, there's no turnover where they go, oh, now the summer games are coming. I can play in those now, too. You have to focus on your sport. Again, I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
I think if you're an Olympian, you pretty much are just an Olympian in one sport.
More times than not.
I mean, perhaps if you're in the track and field category, you
right.
might hold, like,
right.
you know, the 2,000 meter
right.
and the relay.
Right.
But it's, yeah. I would imagine, in the same sport.
Right. There's no bobsled guys that are also doing, you know, the backstroke.
Synchronized swimming?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be something, though?
That would be amazing.
Yeah. I always think of the synchronized swimming of that SNL bit with Martin Short.
And Chris Guest. Yeah. It's very funny. Very funny.
Just every once in a while, Saturday Night Live, some sketch will pop back into my head. We have to go see that exhibit. Aren't we going to broadcast live from there? I think every other show has so far.
I believe we're on schedule to, yeah.
All right, I can't wait to do that at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Now, why are you, like, this year, for some reason, you're excited about the Olympics? I've never seen this before in you.
I get like this every year when I start seeing the promos and hearing the music. The music gets me pumped. Mm-hmm.
It's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, and then I watch a little of it, and then I don't. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited about it. I guess what turns me off, and I was talking to Ryan Burrow about this, it is in the middle of the night, so like I'm not going to stay up to watch it, but then there are things that like I will see who meddled, and I don't...
You meddling kid. I would have got away with it too if it weren't for you meddling kids.
I sometimes... This is going to sound really bad.
I'm sure it won't. Go
sometimes
ahead.
I'd sound as bad as anything else we've heard the past few days.
Guess,
so go
it's
right
not
going to
sound... Really,
go
I can
ahead.
Say anything and it
I'm
won't
sure
sound
it
that
won't
bad.
Sound
and
bad.
It's irritable. Sometimes I don't care who wins.
Oh,
I care about
communist.
Watching the competition. Like, yeah. you know, if it's the winter game. So ice skating, I love watching that. I don't, yeah. it doesn't mean much to me. I know it does to them, but it
right.
doesn't mean much to me who wins. But if I hear that ice skating is on at 2 a.m, they will rebroadcast that. And I like watching that. So then I will go back and watch it.
Interesting.
Can I bust your old bubble for a minute? Because
yes.
you had me curious. There are 136 athletes who have competed in both games.
But from the beginning of time till now.
Yeah, yeah. And what's really more interesting about it is only 5 have won medals. Like, you know.
And this is winter and summer.
Winter and summer.
That's still more than we thought.
And it also, you know, it's from every country. So, you know, starting from 1924.
So out of the thousands and thousands and thousands of athletes that have participated since the beginning of the Olympics, there's only been 136.
You're still not right. You said no one's done it.
I said very few.
Well,
that's not a lot at all.
More than I thought.
It's less than 1%.
Do they put what sports they're in?
They do. And a lot of people, it looks like it says... and I don't know what this means. It says their, you know, their sport was athletics in the summer and then bobsledding in the winter. I don't know what athletics is. Maybe it's like track and field and stuff.
Oh,
I don't
probably
know.
Track and field or
yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, but most of them did either bobsledding and athletics or like cycling and speed skating seemed to go hand in hand.
Interesting.
Now, were these from the regular countries, Kim, or the S-hole countries? Does it say? Does it break it down?
There's a combo. There's
ASS?
There's several S-hole. From Norway.
Oh,
you better be careful.
Letter S.
You almost made me dump you and you weren't even saying the wrong right word.
I want to make sure that we know which countries these people are from.
Make sure you say
well,
that's S.
A separate,
S.
That's a separate line on here.
It is.
Thank you, Kim. Good right. question, though.
Well, yeah,
I know you really had me curious. I had to look it up.
All right, we'll take a quick break, then we'll find out. Oh, Wendy and I are headed toward the stream, as we often do at this time. Steve, however,
we're going to spawn.
Yeah, we're going to spawn upstream. Steve will be here with the Wintrust Business Lunch. We'll get more specifics from him next.